Hey guys, welcome back to another Men's Ministry Podcast here at Frontline Community Church. I'm Chris Opila, an associate pastor, and I'm excited to wrap up our Leadership Focus series today with Ita Udoka. Our topic is leading when it hurts. There's all kinds of pains involved in that, and Ita will lead us through it. It was a great conversation. I'm taking away insights and ready to apply them in my own leadership as a follower of Jesus. I hope you'll gain equal amounts of insights as I've learned from the wisdom of Ita. Now, we are concluding our leadership-focused theme that we've been going over the last few months, and we've got new content coming up next. For those of you who might have some feedback, questions, or even content requests, we'd love to hear from you. We'll get back to you right away. Send us a message at men@frontlinecommunity.org. Maybe you even just have a question for Ita. I'll make sure that gets to him and an answer back to you. All right, let's dive into Leading When It Hurts with Ita Udoka. Well, guys, we're back with the fourth episode in this series we've been doing. I've got our guest, Ita Udoka. Welcome back, Ita.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me back. Excited, always excited to join you in doing this. These are just great conversations, and I look forward to it. So thanks. Absolutely.
We just said, you know, the Holy Spirit's going to lead this thing, and they've been absolutely great conversations. Bless me each time. And I know it's been fun for you as well. Yeah, today, absolutely. Go ahead.
No, it's been exciting just to get some of the feedback and people from all walks of life, even my own dad who listens to it.
Wow, cool.
And much of my leadership lessons I get from him, you know, and so it's always good to hear what he has to say. So.
That's great. He probably says, you know, you got that from me.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's awesome. I love it. Well, today we're going to talk about a tough subject a little bit. It's about leading when it hurts. And we have to define it a little bit. You know, the question is how do we maintain a consistency of decision-making and perseverance when leading is painful? And leading is painful for different reasons. I just was listening to Craig Rochelle. He said, if you're not in pain in some way, you're probably not leading. Pain is a part of the leadership role. And so whether it's just leading in your family, leading an entire organization, somewhere in between, in the middle, you're going to run into situations that result in pain. These are situations that leaders must lead through, and it can come from criticism. It can come from wayward decisions that people make, or even the lack of trust in authority that others are experiencing. Maybe they've been hurt in the past. And so as leaders today come under fire for in various ways, oftentimes greater fire than it used to be. People come under, you know, you mentioned right before this, Ita, getting canceled. It's a risk. Yes. Maybe we'll jump into that. But leaders still have to endure. And I think of Jesus, who endured the cross, even in the most painful moment, where he's completely betrayed and abandoned by his 12 closest followers. And Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2 says, yet for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. So, yeah. Ita, being a leader for as long as you have been, I know there's probably some leadership scars in your life. And so, would you start us off today telling us about a time where you had to hold true to convictions and decisions in the face of a painful decision or painful situation?
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. I smiled when you said leadership scars. Mm. And because of just the significance of scars, you know, when you have a scar, especially a visible scar, it is a reminder of one, where you've come from. It's a reminder of the healing process and a tough lesson learned. I've always, you know, it's something that I've talked and written about the role of scars in our lives. And then just going back to something you said in the beginning, leading when it hurts. And so it is sort of loaded, right? Because when you say leading when it hurts, that could be when it just, when the position you're in or the act of having to lead is becoming a heavy crown to bear. It could also be leading when you hurt as an individual. Mm. And I've been through that, where having to be a leader when I am grieving personally. And that's something that I've dealt with this year with the loss of my mom. Mm-hmm. And having to come to work while I'm actually grieving and going through that process. Mm-hmm. And then leading when others are hurting. Right? And so now you have followers and folks that are on your team who are hurting, whether it's personally or hurting from a situation at work, or just hurting because a decision you made did not go in their favor. Mm-hmm. Just having to lead through that. Yeah. And so it's very loaded. And I heard it said once, and I've said it quite a few times, is that leadership occurs in the gray, right? In that gray area. Because if it's black or white, if it's one or zero, you're not really having to lead. You just make the decision, right? But in the gray, or during the interruptions, right? What happens when things are just going as normal, whatever normal is, and then you get that interruption? It could be as simple as you're a leader, you have this, let's say it's an email you have to get through. Mm-hmm. Someone knocks on your door and says, "Hey, Chris, you got a minute?" That's an interruption.
That's right.
At that point, you have to make a decision as a leader. Or an interruption could be, and this leads to my example to answer your question. A couple of years ago, and this is probably one that had the most impact on me, I was leading an organization. I was coming towards the end of my tenure as a leader. This is that time in, you know, for most people in the military, when you're getting towards the end, you try not to come up with any new ideas, right? You just try to leave the house in a good shape for whoever your replacement is. So this is where I found myself. I was sort of doing more housekeeping than anything, making sure things were in order. And then tragedy struck. Mm. I had a teammate of ours who was doing something that I ordered them to do as a leader of the organization. He was doing something in his role and ended up getting shot and killed at Frankfurt International Airport. This was a huge tragedy. It hit the news, obviously.
Yeah.
And it was worldwide news almost immediately.
Wow.
And we were hurting. I was hurting. Nothing prepared me for this. Mm. The organization was hurting. The community was hurting. Because this was Frankfurt Airport, probably the busiest airport in Europe.
Yeah.
Everyone sort of goes through there, and to lose several teammates at such a safe place really just shocked the community. And I remember just going through that and just thinking, I remember years ago, I had heard a senior leader had said, you know, when tragedy strikes an organization as a leader, you need to be the first one to get over it. Right. Mm-hmm. It sounded really deep at the time when I first heard that. But now when I was actually going through it, I didn't think it was something you get over or that you get through. I think as a leader, it occurred to me that I needed to be emotionally honest.
Authentic
as a leader, because everyone would be watching to see if this was the point where my audio was going to match my video. Right. And so who you really are comes out when you're under pressure.
That's so true.
You know, and so this was a pressure moment. We were all grieving. And I remember one of the first things I did when I had to announce to the organization that we had lost a teammate was really just in a very raw and emotional state, just tell them how I was dealing with it. And I said to them, I said, if you ask me how I'm doing, I will tell you I'm managing. And I was like, you're not going to hear me say we will get through this. I'm managing through this, right? And I also didn't want the team to use the tragedy as an excuse for bad behavior.
Yeah.
Right. And so being able to communicate in a very vulnerable state, how I felt and how I expected all of us to honestly manage our grief, I think was very important at the time. Mm-hmm. And it really reverberated across the organization. I remember one of the things that happened when we lose a teammate, we usually have a fallen warrior ceremony. Mm-hmm. So we planned this thing and I remember we had planned it and we forgot to call the chaplain. We just forgot to call the chaplain. Usually that's the chaplain comes and that's who would maybe, you know, make an intercessory prayer
right
on our behalf. So we forgot to do that. And so we're in this space where we realize, wait, there's no chaplain. And I go, hey, I'll pray. And I'm the leader. And so I got to praying and all of a sudden I'm praying like David. I'm actually mad. I'm mad at God for why would this happen? And I'm questioning God and I'm saying all this out loud. All right. And I'm going through these stages of prayer where I'm being raw, I'm being emotional, but then I find myself switching to being grateful. And just being humbled that we can come together as an organization and manage our grief. And by the time it dawned on me, I had been talking for about 4 minutes, which is like an hour in prayer time.
You're damn right.
Right. And I end this prayer and we continue with the ceremony. And I remember after the event, a lot of our German friends came over and they were saying to me, they had never heard anyone talk like that. You know, and some Americans also, it was like, I didn't know you could be that you could pray that way. And for me, I was just having a conversation, you know? And so the point being, as leaders, I think there's a space for healthy vulnerability when we're hurting, when situations call for it, because you have an impact on how people respond to the hurt. Mm-hmm. But that's an example.
Yeah, you set the tone there.
Oh yeah.
Of how to hurt and yet continue to be faithful to your duties,
yeah,
your leadership. And so you set the culture of grief in a sense of how we're going to get through this.
And I it would be easy for me to say, oh yeah, I had this all planned out. I didn't. I mean, it wasn't that I had this textbook of how to respond when something bad happens. I didn't. And so I thank the good Lord for the conviction of the Holy Spirit, the wisdom, and just the grace. Right. But if we go back to all the previous sessions we've had in this series, I think there's a buildup to this point. One, you know, I remember we started out and I said, leaders must know who they are. Have to have a strong sense of self-awareness, knowing who you are, whose you are, and why you are, so that when those pressure moments arise, when the situation comes up that is unexpected, who you are, whose you are, and why you are come to the forefront. It's one of those things that you cannot fake your way through. And whether it's in for believers or non-believers alike, I think even in things like sports, they always say, you know, true champions come when their backs are up against the wall, right? When everything else isn't going, and we always look at those people and we go, how did they pull through? You know, and so what is it that was in them that allowed them to just the fortitude and the resilience to endure those moments? And I think for us, when you have the ultimate in Jesus Christ and a God who says is for you and not against you, when you have that, you can't help but, you know, have a degree of confidence in knowing that you don't have to get through this alone.
Amen.
And so having that in your background, in your psyche, allows you to approach those pressure-packed moments with a sense that, okay, we can do this. We can do this. I'm not going to be able to do it by myself. And even for me, for that example I just shared, I couldn't do it by myself. I didn't do it by myself. There was a team of people, my family, folks who just stepped up to the plate, who normally wouldn't have stepped up, just stepped up and just, you know, sort of went above and beyond because the situation was so pressure filled. Folks just were empowered to be who they were. And so, so that's just an example that I would share as one of my leadership scars. There are many.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. First of all, Ita, I know that's something that I'm sure still resonates when you have to talk about it, think about it, reflect on it. So thank you for opening up that situation from your life. And I hear you saying when you're in these situations, it comes down to the basics of who you are. Just like in those pressure-packed sports situations, they can throw that pass and make that catch because they've done it 500 times every week for the last 10 weeks. Not under pressure in those situations, but when it came down to pressure, it was muscle memory. And so when you're boiled down by the pressure of pain and critical situations, what comes out is the raw material of who you are.
Absolutely.
And those repetitions in the dark that no one else sees are coming out in those situations where everybody's looking to you. When those situations where every head turns in the room and says, what do we do?
So what's interesting is, so if you look at another kind of hurt, what do you do when the hurt is comes from a decision you made that was unpopular? Right. And I think so what has changed, especially today versus maybe even a decade ago, is it's no longer for leaders, it's no longer simply do as you're told. All right. It was just like, hey, I'm the leader. Here's what I said. And let's go do it.
That's it.
Go take that hill. Right. That's no longer enough. Leaders today have to articulate why, mm-hmm. you know, the why behind their decisions, and also think through almost two steps ahead. You can't play checkers anymore as a leader. You have to play chess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of scary if you think about it. When you're going to make that decision, now you're thinking, oh my gosh, if I send this out, will they think I'm racist? Will my hidden bias come out? Will they understand it? Is the comma in the right place?
Yeah.
I mean, you're thinking, what could be the potential reaction? What if someone screenshots this message and puts it on social media, and mm-hmm. now I am being canceled in the yeah. court of public opinion? I mean, that's what leaders, you know, in a scary kind of way, are having to ponder in this day and age. And so what do you do when your decision has the potential to hurt, you know? And so
I'm hoping you answer that question for me, Ita.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I'm, you know, trying to think about it and just go, okay, first of all, have you gone through the steps in your mind of why you do what you do? And oh, by the way, that's not a journey you take on your own. You know, most leaders have trusted agents. Mm-hmm. It is a team sport. You know, mm-hmm. leadership is a team sport. First of all, you're not the only person that's had to make such decisions. And so I think every leader should have a phone or a friend and a lifeline Absolutely. That they can call and say, hey, I'm about to make this decision. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to send this email. Can you look it over and tell me what I'm missing or if I'm saying anything that, you know, is ridiculous or is just crazy? I mean, you got to have that team that can do that for you. Mm-hmm. And if you go back to some of our earlier sessions, this is where diversity is an asset.
Mm, that's so good.
This is where diversity is an asset, because if you're sending that email to someone who's just like you, they too won't see it.
That's
and
it's it.
Like, yeah, Chris, you're good. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just as soon as you press send, you know, you have that Homer Simpson Thor moment, like, oh, yeah, I missed that. And so
yeah.
diversity becomes that asset in that being able to have a team that has diversity of thought, diversity in makeup, mm-hmm. so that when you do ask for that lifeline, you're getting someone who sees the world a little differently from you and may be able to point out some of those hidden biases that you have that you just wouldn't have thought of. So that's an asset. That's a way to approach those decisions. But yeah, if you're coming from a place of where you have articulated the why, with your organization, and gone through those steps and getting others to look at and consider their inputs to your decisions. And then just be ready, you know, just be ready. Yes. Are you going to get, the negative response? Absolutely. Especially where resources, come to play. Mm. Right. So yeah. you have to make cuts.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what do you do? I think one decision, one point that leaders have to think through is, do you have what you need? And do you need what you have?
Those are both crucial questions.
Yeah. So as a leader, you think about those two questions.
Right.
As in my organization, do I have what I need?
Yeah.
Right. And so that's where most people find themselves. Like, do I have what I need? Most of the time the answer is no. I could use more people. I could need, I could use it
always
in my budget.
Right.
But the harder part is, do you need what you have? Mm-hmm. You know, or are there things that we're doing? Are there things that we have that no longer add value? And now, how do you cut bait or realign things? And no one likes their cheese being moved. A lot of people just don't like change. And so when you're that leader that has to, you know, sort of change things, messaging becomes very important. Mm-hmm. I remember, I think one of the books I recommended earlier on was the book Five Voices. Mm-hmm. And you know, in that book, it describes those who have to make change. You have to figure out, of the five voices, who are best suited to be your salespeople. And so if you think about advertisers, who they target their advertising towards, usually they're guardians, you know, usually they're moms. They're people who like to protect. And if you can convince a guardian or a protector about why you're making a change, they become your best salespeople.
Absolutely.
You know,
I'm a guardian, by the way, Ita. If you get me on your team, I'll be your biggest advocate.
Absolutely. And I figured that, Chris. So but I think for leaders, you got to figure out if you're trying to make those tough decisions, maybe you're not the best salesperson for that decision. So is there a member of your team that you can get to buy in to what you're trying to do and then have them be your salespeople?
That's good. Yeah.
And that's, you know, and they become very convincing as in explaining why we're doing what we're doing. I had a situation where I had to ask the question, do we need what we have? And we didn't need what we had because the budget didn't support what we had. Mm. You know, and so I had to make cuts. And it was not popular because people had always enjoyed the fact that we were the largest. And the thing is, we couldn't afford to be the largest anymore. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I said to the team was, it doesn't do us any good to be the largest if we can't be the best. Mm-hmm. So tell me what you would rather be.
Right.
The biggest or the best? And mm-hmm. I think most people were like, well, yeah, we want to be the best. I was like, okay, if we want to be the best, and then we're going to have to make some cuts.
Oh, that's such a good trade. I right. love that.
And so I think that question of, do you need what you have, and how you message that to people, sometimes it resonates easier than, hey, we're just making cuts.
Yeah.
And in large organizations, you know, you always have people who will go, well, how can you just make these kinds of cuts when you're still driving an 18-wheeler. Shouldn't we cut that instead? You know, why fire me? Why not just go from an 18-wheeler to something smaller?
Right.
You know, and so it's like I said, everybody wants to be LeBron. No one wants to do the work, right? Leadership, everybody wants to wear that crown, but it is a tough position to be in when you think about the amount of decisions, the kinds of decisions leaders get to make on a daily basis. So,
yeah, I heard one person say, what mantle of leadership, whatever it is, the other people will never understand the weight you carry because it's a unique position in a unique time with unique situations. And so that is a unique burden that you're going to carry. Well, Ita, to wrap us up, I want to throw this one last question at you. This one's with critics. Mm-hmm. How have you used critics and what they've said to strengthen your resolve or improve your leadership? over the course of your career. I think of Jesus, who was strengthened in the face of the criticism he received from Pharisees and was able to take it and deal some back in some ways, but really set him in confidence of the desire to meet the needs of the people that were being taken advantage of with the Pharisees. But is there something that you can rely on point to in your career of a way that you've allowed criticism to strengthen your leadership?
So that's a good question. I think first things first is being able to distinguish constructive criticism from personal attacks.
That's good.
Right. And so criticism, you know, when it's constructive, it helps.
Yeah.
You know, it would be wrong to assume that I have cornered the market on great ideas. I haven't. I'm not even close.
Yeah.
And so when someone offers a criticism that is constructive, I've gotten into this habit of just thanking people up front and just saying, hey, thanks.
That's awesome.
Thank you for that. And then if it is something that I hadn't thought about, and I go, hey, I appreciate that. Thanks for that feedback. And then I move on. Now when if it's a personal attack, I haven't had, at least not face to face, where someone has attacked me personally. Mm. But I have seen circumstances where, people may have gotten terse, and it's not at me personally. It's probably something that they perceive my team was doing or my organization was doing. And so I think for me, it is important to sort of be the cool glass of water in the room,
mm-hmm.
right? To be the one that sort of de-escalates and sort of calms things down, taking ego out of play entirely, right? So you're not attacking me. You're not happy with a perception that you have about what we're doing. And if there's someone on the team who's actually has done something untoward, you own it.
Yeah.
I just go, you know what? That's on me. Yeah. I'm not on the person. I take that and I go, hey, that's on me. We'll correct.
That's good.
And all of that is to just de-escalate and just say, okay, I really want to be a problem solver. I want to fix. I want us, you know, to have a cordial, collaborative relationship. So I will own what I own, and so that we can move forward and be better. So I take criticism as helpful. And as long as I leave ego out, because for me, you know, I take my role as God given.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here because God placed me here.
Yeah.
Right. And so as long as I approach my day with humility and grace and mercy and expectation of what God has in store, it's hard to phase me. Mm-hmm. Now, I also know that, you know, we always want a bed of roses. Everybody expects the day to just be this beautiful bed of roses. And like you've heard me say this, even roses have thorns.
Yeah, right? For sure.
So I expect that in any given day, there's going to be a thorny moment. And, you know, I face it with expectation. I say, okay, Lord, I'm here to learn. This is going to teach me. Maybe I am, my head's getting too big. And so this is going to remind me of who I am and whose I am. But when it does come, when the criticism does come, I look inward, take ego out of the equation and figure out, well, how can I learn? Now, if it's a personal attack, even that I have to address with grace and mercy.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not a good time to send an email.
Fair enough.
For me, I'll pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And I'll ask questions. It's like, hey, I just want to try to understand what you meant.
That's good.
And what I found a lot of times is, you know, people get really keyboard confident until they hear your voice.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that courage, that keyboard courage sort of dissipates. And then there's a lot of, well, you know, I really didn't mean it that way. What I was trying to get, yeah. So I don't do the email arguments or keyboard, you know, conflict type stuff. One, two emails on a subject, and then I'm picking up the phone, or I'll just come see you. And I go, hey, let's have a conversation and let's talk through whatever. And you'll find out when you do that, you know, they say hurt people hurt people. They were probably hurt from something else to begin with. And the fact that you're not, you know, trying to be combative or trying to go on the offensive just de-escalates. And then you can both learn from each other's perspective. I like this, the quote from, it says Stephen Covey, but St. Francis of Assisi also said it, seek first to understand, than to be understood. And I think a lot of times when you get these criticisms, whether personal or constructive, when you understand where they're coming from, you can be really just a calming presence in the room and just say, okay, I get it. And if you're the one who caused the hurt, just own it, apologize, seek forgiveness, and move forward. It does not diminish how God sees me when I do that. And that's the big thing. It's like, none of this makes me any smaller in the eyes of God. Right. And so I try not to give a lot of power to unregistered voters. if you're not a voter in my system, in my life, and in my spirit, I give you no power to change how I feel and how what God did for me on the cross.
That's awesome.
So
I love talking with you, Ita. I learn so much every time. Some things that you're saying I've never heard before. Some things I've never articulated. You know, it's just wonderful to have a guy like you who has really honed in his leadership skills, has thought deeply about it, is intentional. And so I'm very grateful for these chats we've had, Ita. Thank you so much for sharing your leadership brain with us.
It hurts that it has to come to an end. We got to figure out other topics to talk about.
Absolutely.
I've really enjoyed this. I know you say I've honed in on it. I'm still learning. I'm still learning how to be who God has called me to be. I'm still learning how to be a better leader, a better hand and foot of God's call on my life. And I am grateful for every opportunity that I am given to play a certain role on this side of heaven. And so for me, it's, you know, everything is ministry. You know, I just, you know, for me, the pulpit is the market space, right? And you get to whatever it is you believe, what you've read and what the Holy Spirit has revealed to you. The place where that comes to play is wherever God has placed you in the world. You know, I'm not waiting for a specific phone call to go do something. I feel like we've all been called to go out into the workspace and in anything that we're doing to just show that which we truly believe on the inside. And so I thank you for this opportunity with this medium to just share just some of those experiences. Hopefully someone benefits from it. If not, I've just enjoyed the fellowship with you. And
absolutely.
And that's always an iron sharpened iron moment for me. So thank you, Chris.
Amen. All right. Well, this wraps up the leadership series. I've got some ideas for moving forward, maybe in the new year, Ita.
Awesome.
Once we get through our holiday travels and things. So looking forward to reconnecting again. And for you guys listening, thanks for hearing us out. And we do hope that this has been helpful. If you've got feedback or questions for Ita, hit us up, send us a message at men@frontlinecommunity.org. I'll make sure that gets to Ita, and we'll get a response to you. We'd love to hear from you. So God bless, guys. And thanks again, Ita.
Thank you, Chris.